Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, an educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Good afternoon, Brian.
How are you doing today?
I was just trying to center myself because I came in a flurry, as you know. And so my heart's beating so fast that I needed to calm myself a little, or I was afraid I would start off talking like I had 64 cups of coffee. So I'm trying really hard to just find my center. And I'm feeling, you know, very sad because, like so many people, the passing of Prince has been really profound in my life. Because his music has been part of the soundtrack of my life. I'm wearing my black paisley pants today in honor of Prince. And I think we're going to go out today with a tribute to Prince. So a little music there. So, you know, it's just interesting because I said to my husband last night, you know, is it shallow or, you know, wrong to mourn someone that you didn't really know, but you just admired or their music, you know, impacted their life? Am I just, you know, is it trite to say that I feel great sense of loss and pain? I don't know. I mean, because clearly people are so moved that they travel to his home and want to leave memorials. I mean, we are moved as a group, but I wondered if I was cheapening my feelings about Prince by saying out loud how much his loss hurts inside, because we've lost a lot of artists in the last few months.
Yeah, it's been a heavy year for that.
I know. So that's kind of where I'm at, but I'm finding my way back. My breath is good. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Yes.
I was just saying it was a beautiful Earth Day weekend, lots of stuff going on around the whole county.
I know. So your band played at the Earth Day celebration. How'd that go?
Yeah, the one at El Toro Park. It was great. It was really fun.
Good turnout?
Yeah, pretty good. I think it's been better before, but there were so many other things going on that day that just people were spread out around the county doing all sorts of good things.
But, you know, it goes back to what I said last week at the top of the show, is that when this is kind of the premier issue that affects every single human being, it feels like we should shut down all activities around Earth Day and maybe have a day or at least a weekend where we just, you know, stop moving at 1,000 miles an hour and just breathe it in.
Yeah.
Right. And slow it down and raise our awareness about what's going on in the world around us, which kind of leads me to today's conversation, today's topic. It is Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And so I have a couple guests in the studio to talk about some of an event that's happening in the area, but also to talk about sexual assault awareness and what we've seen going on in the last few years, some improvements, some concerns. But the interest that I had in the idea of the Sexual Assault Awareness Month wasn't necessarily just that idea of sexual assault awareness, but was the whole idea of awareness in itself. Because if you do any sort of searching, you can see that every month has an awareness of something, right? So we have, you know, drug abuse awareness, suicide prevention and awareness. I mean, we do shows on a lot of those different concerns. And what concerns me is that when we focus on awareness and prevention, you would think that we would see improvements in those areas. But when it comes to suicide prevention and awareness, we've actually seen an increase since 1994 by 25% in suicides in this country. So we've seen, you know, a decrease in participation in environmental movements, even though we have Earth Day and, you know, environmental awareness campaigns. We've actually seen a decrease in participation. And with sexual assault awareness, I'm sure my guests will be able to inform me, but, you know, there is continuing to be an increase in sexual assaults and rapes, not just on college campuses, but in society at large. And so it makes me wonder if we're not approaching this from the wrong angle, that maybe by raising awareness and the idea of prevention, we're just singing to the choir, right? The people that already want this to be out there, that have had an experience, you know, in their life somehow that's been changed profoundly because of sexual assault or rape or suicide or, you know, drug abuse, that you would get on the campaign, you would go to the events, you would really want other people to participate and belong. But how do we activate the 99% of the other people who that's not on their radar? none of these things have touched their life that they know of, or it's touched their life and they don't want to deal with it. So the real issue is, how do we grab the rest of the people that we're trying to build awareness around and get them involved? You know, it seems that for many people, it's overload that they're experiencing, right? That there's so much bad news. It's so overwhelming to think about climate change. It's so overwhelming to think about drug abuse and addiction and the opiate epidemic that we're in, you know, suicides on the increase in every population, from young children to middle-aged women to the elderly. It becomes so much that I think we shut down and we can't take in more information. So then we numb out and we go to a wine and cheese festival, right? Because we just can't cope with more bad news. So I keep wondering if we need to change where our energy and focus is around awareness, and instead of, you know, bringing up the negative news, to maybe have our awareness be about how to do things well and how to do things positively, how to have a healthy relationships month, right? Or talk about the joy of life month, or, you know, Earth ecstasy month. I mean, things that draw people in a positive way and educate, instead of that feeling like it's all coming down around us. So that's kind of where I am today. And I know there's a wide conversation to be held around this topic. So I'm looking forward to getting your thoughts on this and to opening up the phone lines. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can be part of the conversation by phone at 805-781-3875. You can visit us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, our website, thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org. Under the News Talk tab, or you can subscribe and have our shows downloaded to your devices through iTunes or other ways that you download apps. You just have to Google Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Make sure it has the KCBX logo in the bottom corner so that you get all of the latest shows. And also, because it is our spring pledge drive and we're not going to stop the show to do a big pitch, we do want to remind you that we are in the process of bringing in funds to keep the radio station firing on all cylinders. And your support for this show is really important. We like to know what it is that you listen to on KCBX. And so I think they're always looking to find out who's out there listening to the show. And your phone call with a pledge lets them know that this is something that you value. Whether you're listening in your car, at home, on your radio, online, podcasting the show, you can call in or go online and make your pledge or donation and let them know that this is a show that you value. And then that keeps us around for another year. So how do they make that pledge, Brian?
They call 549-8855 or go to kcbx.org. And you're right. If you call and donate right now during the show, that is like a vote saying you like this show and you want to help support, keep it on the air. So let us know that you appreciate the conversation with Elizabeth every Tuesday afternoon by calling 549-8855 or kcbx.org.
So today I am fortunate to have two guests who are experts in the area of sexual assault and awareness. And I know that they've been out talking to a lot of different people this month to not only spread the word about the statistics and the concerns about sexual assault, rape, and domestic violence in partnerships, but also to talk about an event that's coming up this Saturday, April the 30th. So I'd like to first introduce James Sofranco. Hello, James.
Hi, Elizabeth. How are you doing?
I'm doing really well.
So funny to call you that.
I know. I don't know if you should. I think you should call me
I'll
Professor
call you Professor
Bear.
B if you'd like.
Make me feel better, yeah. Call me Prof. B. So James is a former student of mine, and we met probably middle of last year in my intro to the counseling profession class, and partway through the quarter, I saw this light go on inside of you. And you started really talking about the issues of women's rights and gender equality and got incredibly fired up. So tell me where your interest has taken you and what you're doing with your interest today.
Yeah, so it's, you know, that class definitely was particularly kind of, I would say, almost like a watershed experience for me. Because before then, I really hadn't decided what I was going to do next. And that's part of through that class, I learned about AmeriCorps, which is now what I am doing. But I think for me, I kind of got involved in kind of social justice related, you know, that sort of process and that sort of thinking and those sorts of activities a couple of years prior at Cal Poly. And that before that, your class kind of led, gave me a bit of like a chance to figure out how I could actually do it because it was so conceptual before.
So the social justice interested you. You're coming up to graduation that June and trying to figure out what was going to be next. So what became the focus of your AmeriCorps service?
Yeah, so I am serving at AmeriCorps, at a local nonprofit here in San Luis Obispo called RISE. And RISE is the county's Sexual Assault and Intimate Partner Violence Resource Agency. So we provide all kinds of services to not only survivors, but also their loved ones in the community who have been affected by this. And what my role is through the AmeriCorps VIP program is my primary responsibility is to work with volunteers and to recruit and train people to get involved in the organization and help people in the community with this issue.
So you would think that RISE would be primarily a woman's focus or issue or concern. So why was RISE an important place for you to get involved?
So RISE was something that in a sense, I sort of stumbled into, even though when I was in undergrad, I focused as a minor in women's and gender studies. So I cared about the issues that surrounded around women and people of the non-cisgender norm. And how I ended up at RISE was more of like I found out that I could get some really awesome experience counseling people there and being able to help people in a really concrete way. And so I went through their 65-hour training and became a certified sexual assault and domestic violence crisis advocate. And from there, I found it to be really amazing and incredibly powerful. And so I just kind of stuck around. And when I found out that there was an AmeriCorps opening at that agency, opening up that fall, I just jumped in head first, and it's been something that has been certainly challenging, but a very rewarding experience.
So I want to go back also to women and gender studies minor, because did you feel like you were stepping into an unwelcoming zone, or was everyone ready to take in a guy to the women and gender studies? Because I would imagine that it's heavily skewed on one side of the gender spectrum.
Yeah, so I definitely would encourage you to bring that up with Megan in a minute. As far as my involvement in it, there's been plenty of people who kind of paved the way by the time I got there to where it was a very welcoming place for men to be involved. And honestly, I think the reason why I feel like it's been such a positive experience is because or it was such a positive experience for me when I was a student there, is because there were faculty members and students in that program who were just really excited to have men who cared about the issue and were there to learn. Because, the reality is that a lot of people in general don't really focus on this and don't really think about it, but particularly men don't really view this as an issue that's relevant to them. And so for me, when I was able to find a professor who really, was super welcoming and was excited the fact that I cared and was happy that I was there. The fact that I was able to connect with a faculty member in that way in that particular subject, and connect with my passion for just social justice and positive change in our community, it worked out really well.
And so, as you're completing, it seems like you're coming upon the end of your year with AmeriCorps and working with RISE. And the event that you've been really busy with coming up April 30th, you want to talk a little bit about that? Because I think that's kind of the pinnacle of where you've been working all year to get to, right?
Yeah, it's been a big part of what my co-chair, Megan, who's sitting across the table from me, have been working on for many months. But the event is Walk a Mile in Our Shoes, and it's the International Men's March to End Sexual Assault and Gender-Based Violence in Our Communities. And we at RISE, we host two events in SLO County every year, one in Paso Robles, which we already had a couple weeks ago, and then one in San Luis Obispo, the city proper, and Mission Plaza. And that's going to be this Saturday on the 30th from 10 to 1. And we're really excited because the whole idea is to just get a bunch of men out there to, I mean, we encourage people to bring their whole families, but you know, you're trying to get men out there in high heels to, it's kind of a fun, lighthearted event, but it's a very serious topic. And so you get these men marching through downtown in their high heels, to, you know, get people to kind of like look, you know, look twice and kind of be like, what is that that's going on? And recognize that, yeah, this is a serious issue, but it's something that we all need to be, you know, we all need to be thinking about, and we all need to play our part into supporting survivors and then, you know, playing the role in stopping this from ever even happening.
And making it safe for everyone to walk in their heels wherever wherever they want to go.
Exactly.
And so my other guest today is Megan Rivoire.
Correct.
All right. And Megan is the RISE Outreach Coordinator. And Megan, why don't you tell us a little bit about why this is a subject that's passionate for you and why you're a part of this, why you're part of RISE?
Absolutely. I have never been able to stay away from RISE, actually. I, too, got started as an AmeriCorps member. I was a art and design major with a women's and gender studies minor at Cal Poly. And I did AmeriCorps at the SARP Center, which was a sexual assault recovery and prevention center, before we merged with the North County Women's Shelter and became RISE. And I wore many hats in my time there. It was a much smaller agency, so providing crisis work, doing the outreach, and I was just a cause that as a woman had always affected me, but particularly one of my best friends in college was a survivor of long-term childhood sexual abuse. And it really affected her every single day of her life. And I wanted to learn more about it. And so I got involved with SARP Center, now RISE. And I left the agency to do more marketing, photography, designy things, and immediately joined the board of directors, was on the board for 4 years, and was only off the board for a few months before I just came back as outreach coordinator. So I'm very excited to be back because I can go to work every day and know that I'm helping people, and it just feels really good.
So I wonder if people think that there isn't a crisis intervention hotline necessary in a place like San Luis Obispo or Monterey County or in Santa Barbara County, right? This Central Coast is known for its beauty and its peacefulness and its mm-hmm. safety. And so would people be surprised at the need?
Yes, absolutely. That was a question I always got when I was working at SARP and even now at RISE. Like, oh, why do you exist? Oh, is it because of the college? It's the college in this town, so you're here to help them. No, Cal Poly has their own program, which we work very closely with, SAFER, but it's a community-wide issue. And like I mentioned with my friend, one of the largest groups of people that we help are adults that were molested as children. Mm-hmm. So sexual assault, intimate partner violence, it's often something that happens behind closed doors, and it's shameful, even though we know the victims are not to blame. So oftentimes people live with these secrets for years or decades before they realize that it's still affecting them, and they need to reach out and get some support and know that they're not alone.
So we're not just talking about sexual assault awareness, as we have come to talk quite a bit about on campuses mm-hmm. and college campuses, because that's gotten a lot of the press, but you're talking about a much broader spectrum of sexual violence,
mm-hmm. yeah,
childhood violence, domestic partner violence. And also, I thought it was interesting that when we look at statistics, 44% of sexual assault and rape actually occurs to young women under the age of 18. So we focused a lot of our energy on, you know, college campuses and college assault, but really so much, almost half of it's happening to young girls under the age of 18, where they're getting very little support and have very little access to resources.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Some of the most at-risk age groups are actually under 18 and college-aged for different demographics, different reasons. But yeah, it's scary, and it's a hard thing to talk about with your kids. And I was something that came to mind earlier when you were talking about the Walk a Mile in Her Shoes event is if you feel like your kid's at the age where you're going to talk to your daughter about safety, it's probably time to talk to your son about consent. And we need to have this conversation with women and with men because it affects all of us.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guests today are James and Megan. They are here from RISE. We're talking about Sexual Assault Awareness Month and trying to broaden the conversation, the topic, to not just focusing on what's going on college campuses. And as you mentioned, Cal Poly, for example, has SAFER, which is their college-based sexual assault awareness program. But RISE actually is to service the community, and I don't know if a lot of people are aware of that. And you're invited to be part of this conversation, 805-781-3875, if you have a question or comment you'd like to share. And I'd like to kind of talk about What I brought up at the beginning of the show is this idea of awareness. And in spite of all of these awareness months, why do we still see increases in the behaviors like suicide and sexual assault mm-hmm. and drug abuse? And I'm wondering if it's because we're not really, one, it's the overload. People can't keep taking in such negative information all the time that we tune it out. We don't want to hear anymore. Mm-hmm. Negativity, but also what you're talking about, that we're not talking about these issues early enough and we're not talking about them correctly. And so let's talk about sex education and the lack of mm-hmm. comprehensive sex education in schools and the conversation about consent and healthy relationships with children. What do you see going on in those areas? Maybe either one of you, because I have some thoughts, but I'm going to throw it out to both of you.
Well,
I would say that it's really important that we look at this issue, like you were saying, as it's not, if you start looking at it like it's something you need to address in college, you're starting way too late. Mm-hmm. That it really the root causes of sexual assault, if you really look at what really is causing this issue, a lot of people think it's about it's about sex because it's sexual assault, but just like you wouldn't call somebody hitting a person over the head with a shovel gardening. You don't call sexual assault is not about sex. It's about power and control. And so if we really start looking at those root causes, where that comes from, it's that sort of thing is getting instilled in the young minds of, basically our the youth in our community long before they get to college. It's junior high and high school is when actually those are the times when intervention needs to happen. And it's actually one of the really probably the most exciting parts of our organization is our prevention education programs, where we go into high schools and junior high schools when we can to talk about healthy relationships, talk about consent, talk about these issues. Because if you wait till college, your mind is a lot more formed by that point.
Mm-hmm. So you said two things, though.
Sure.
One was about the idea that sexual assault is more about power and control and it's not about sex. And so I can understand that in theory, and especially when we have, perpetrators that are continuously sexually assaulting others. All of a sudden, my mind didn't go where I wanted to. But I think there is the sexual aspect of it. If we're going to talk about sexual behaviors on a large scale and talking about consent, right? I mean, there has to be a segment of the population where the sexual assault is an aggressive form of violence. But isn't there on the spectrum of sexual violence in relationships or, sexual partner violence or consent, where there's the ignorance in young people's heads about what sexuality is or how it actually works? And so hear me out. because I think in my head, this link of we lack comprehensive sexual education. And it's interesting because at the beginning of the month, I did a whole show on sex and sexuality and relationships and how even in adult relationships, we don't talk about sex with our partners. So it's impossible to think that young children or teenagers or college students are going to talk honestly about sex and their body parts and how they feel about themselves. We only have, 22 states that require comprehensive sex education, only 13 states that require it to be medically accurate, 27 states that require abstinence be the primary source of education. And so I always wonder, at what point then do we teach children how to have healthy relationships, how to be in relationship with each other, how to have conversations, that sex is more than just the act, right? That there's the whole emotional piece that goes along in it, that we don't teach any of those things in school. I think in 2015, there was Teach Children Healthy Relationships Act that was proposed by a Democrat, Teach Safe Relationships Act. And it was proposed to actually, by second grade, be teaching children through actually friendships how to have healthy relationships, how to be friends, how to have consent when you want to play with your friend and they don't want to play with you, instead of bashing them on the head, with your shovel, learning about. I mean, there was so many great layers to this, and yet it was gutted and turned into the Every Student Succeeds Act, where there's a little bit of teaching of healthy relationships. But it feels like just the dark muck of actually talking about sex and healthy interactions and consent and making healthy partnerships is missing, because I also think there's a terrible mixed message. And because you're both fairly recent college graduates, I feel like in your generation, there's this mixed message of don't get in a serious relationship, right? Don't get tied down with someone. Don't get married too young. It's all about your career and setting yourself up for your future. And so you don't want to get tied down to one person. And yet your biology is saying, I want to be with someone else. I want to be in an intimate relationship, right? Our biology is driving us there. And so what do you do with all of that energy that's driving you towards an emotionally intimate relationship, and you're being discouraged from building those relationships? All of that sexual energy, I think, comes out in confusing and dark ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think those conversations need to happen between empowered women and men with healthy ideas of masculinity. Sexual assault is something that often happens between two people behind closed doors, and consensual sex is something that happens between two people behind closed doors. And speaking from my own personal experience growing up and with seeing what the media told me about sex, it was an embarrassing thing that I didn't really want to talk about. And when you're with someone in that moment of to get the consent, if women don't feel comfortable in their own bodies and owning themselves and saying what they do want, not just what they don't want, but what they do want, and men don't know how to deal with that information or to have that conversation, that is a really big part of it, I think. And that kind of goes back to what James was saying about our prevention education programs. And what's so interesting about those is those aren't just the let's get the whole school together in an assembly for 1 hour and we're going to have them come here. We're going to have rides come and we're going to talk about sexual assault. That doesn't really work. People aren't paying attention. That's not how you have those meaningful conversations with kids to change their behaviors. So we have two awesome educators that run programs called My Strength and Her Power. And they meet with small groups of middle schoolers and high schoolers. It's mostly high schoolers, isn't it? They meet with small groups of high schoolers and they do, I think it's 12 weeks. 1 hour sessions where they dive into these issues and talk about things. You know, what do you guys think a healthy relationship looks like? And not just talking about like, this is what sexual assault is, this is bad, you know, but to have those conversations that are tough and kids are sometimes shy about, but if they have it now, then they're going to be so much more able to have it when they're in a moment where they need to.
And so, who contacts RISE? I mean, do we see the school districts seeing this as an important program and contacting you, or are you having to market yourself and convince the schools that this is necessary?
A little bit of both, depending on what school district. Mm-hmm. Right now, some of our most, I think, I don't want to speak for the whole program, but some of our most successful programs in our ongoing relationship has been with the Grizzly Youth Academy, where teens come for a year to, it's almost like a military-based education program. And so it's much more immersion-based, and they're able to identify kids that they suggest for the program, teens that they suggest for the program. But there have been some schools that I know, since my SARP days, we've been working forever to convince them that they need us to come in and do those programs. And each school is different. It helps if you have a teacher on the inside who really understands the value of what we're trying to do.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of it just really comes down to the priorities of our education system right now, and that I think everyone recognizes that this is a serious issue and that we need to do something about it. But when it comes down to actually working out the logistics, finding the funding for these sorts of things, a lot of schools aren't actually taking that initiative to bring educators in to talk about it. And of course, it's because part of it is it's very controversial, and that you get people who, parents who, as soon as you hear anything talking about sexual consent or boundaries or anything like that, they get very upset and they let, you know, the school board know that they're not okay with their child being in a classroom where that sort of thing is being discussed. And so it really comes down to, we need to educate in order for this to become a widespread movement where it's not like we're in four or five schools, but we're, you know, it's not just RISE. There's programs like these in schools throughout every county, and throughout the county and in every county in America. Is, you know, you have to get the public on board with it. You have to get people to recognize that this is really important, that we start educating young, because if we don't, we're going to continue to see these effects where these numbers on college campuses and beyond are just astronomically horrible.
Well, and I do think it's interesting when it comes to the sexual education, sex education, abstinence versus comprehensive, that they've shown statistically that areas where abstinence only is taught have higher rates of rape and sexual assault mm-hmm. than areas where they have comprehensive sex education. And that if you've had comprehensive sex education, you're more likely to have your first sexual encounter in a safe and healthy relationship, mm-hmm. as opposed to being taught abstinence only. You tend to have your first sexual experience drunk and numb and hoping that, you know, no one finds out. Mm-hmm. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. My guests today, James and Megan, are from RISE, and we're talking about Sexual Assault Awareness Month, and we're inviting you to be a part of the conversation also. 805-781-3875 is the number to be part of the conversation. You are listening to Public Radio KCBX. And so let's talk about kind of the movement piece. You know, I'm really big on movements and the energy of, you know, getting a lot of people involved in an issue and changing the course of it. And I think things like, you know, walking a mile in her heels are kind of that movement effort to have a lot of people taking to the streets, literally, to say we're not going to allow this to happen in the dark anymore, that we're going to own it as a culture. And so one of my passions is the idea of this fourth wave feminist movement that I see emerging. Mm-hmm. You know, we had the suffragist movement and we had the equality movement of the 70s and we had the gender third wave of feminism, right, to free up gender equality. But I see this fourth wave being led by men who want to have healthy, strong, equal relationships with women, want to have the opportunity to express themselves emotionally and have a wider range of gender identities or gender roles that they can play in the community. And I wonder if this fourth wave of feminism that I envision is a way to help reduce the sexual inequality, the power and control that you talked about, James. And would you consider yourself a fourth wave feminist leading the charge?
Yeah, you know, it's funny, I was just having a conversation with one of my colleagues before I came here today about the concept of fourth wave feminism and how it's, you know, there's so much discussion around, you know, taking a feminist theory class at Cal Poly, there's so much discussion about whether or not fourth wave feminism is even here, or are we still at the tail end of third wave, or is this enough to even call a wave? So with
or
all
if
that,
men should even be on the wave.
Sure, exactly. Why are we obsessed with oceans? But as far as, you know, how I would say, I don't know if I would ever call myself a fourth wave feminist. But I definitely consider myself a feminist and somebody who believes that it's incredibly important for men to be involved in the movement, not only because it's men play a huge role in stopping gender-based violence, not just by perpetrating it, but also being an active bystander. And when you see something, you stop it. But more than that, I believe it really frees up men to be more of themselves and to have richer lives, healthier lives, because When it comes to the way that our culture is treating masculinity, treating how we say that men should be, there's some really unhealthy tendencies, and what we actually like to call it is toxic masculinity, where it's, you know, when you're telling men that, you know, the only sorts of emotions that you should be expressing are anger, then when you experience something else that's not anger and you're trying to channel it into anger, it's not a healthy way to live your life. If you feel like you can't cry when you're sad, or you can't really fully express the emotions that you're feeling, those get bottled up. And of course, you know, you as a therapist know that those are the sorts of things that lead to just really unhealthy coping mechanisms and unfortunate ways of interacting with life and within life with other people. And then, of course, one of the negative effects of that is people end up having really unhealthy relationships with other people, where that can lead to miscommunications in relationships, to misunderstandings and boundaries and consensual relationships when it comes to consensual sex. So I honestly believe that all of these issues are really intertwined together, to where being a feminist as a man is not just about standing up for women, but it's also standing up for everybody, standing up for men too, and saying that it's okay to be who you are and to feel the emotions that you feel.
But I think that was the original intention, you know, of the of the second and third waves of feminism, that it's really about speaking for those who can't speak for themselves, right? Ecofeminism is about speaking for the environment. I mean, I think when we talk about feminism, it's more of an energy than an actual female-specific movement, that we're talking about that feminine energy, that caring, giving, loving feminine energy. You know, the masculine energy is about doing and building and creating, which is also important. But to be able to enjoy and embrace the feminine energy, for men to be able to say, I can experience that in healthy ways. Because what you said earlier was, you know, that sexual assault is about power and control. But as a therapist, I'm always about the empathy. If we can empathize with what's driving even bad behaviors, that I think underneath it for these men and women who are perpetrating sexual assaults, there is this desire to connect and be loved also, and not having the tools to express that. I mean, would I be way off in seeing that connection in any way?
Not way off, I don't think.
It's because really it goes against your message.
It is really tough. And I mean, because we also know that most sexual assault is not the stranger jumping out of the bushes. It's between two people that know each other. So it is a lot more tied up in those experiences that you're talking about. And I do think it comes down to that, what we see in the media, what our culture tells us about you deserve, men deserving sex, you know, and that everyone's getting it, so why can't I? And you see that kind of attitude in men sometimes as they get frustrated when they can't land a date with a girl,
right,
or access it. And it's mm-hmm. and it's that idea that it's a right, that everyone else has it, I should have it, and not seeing that as a person who's able to make their own decisions and want that or not as well.
But where else are they learning a different message? I mean, the message that we're sending to young men and to young women is that women's bodies are to be exploited. If you look at Sports Illustrated Magazine, Victoria's mm-hmm. Secret, you know, every product that we sell from liquor to Charmin disembodies women by putting the products right on their naked body. I mean, I go back to the empathy for how young men get to this place where they feel no other way of expressing themselves sexually except in these violent ways, because they're seeing women disembodied. They're seeing them as being exploited. If you look at, you know, listen to pop music and the messages in popular culture, you know, saying things like men should be players and women should perform for their men. I mean, those are lyrics and songs. Mm-hmm. I go back to, it's difficult to expect young men and women to behave any differently given the toxicity of the entire culture. And just one other thing I want to mention is not just the messages we're teaching young men about their bodies, but again, back to young women, young girls, an article that popped up on my news feed yesterday was about labiaplasty, which is a form of vaginal rejuvenation that's usually done on older women. It's a plastic surgery, but they had, you know, 813 young girls under the age of 18 come in requesting labiaplasty to shave it down, to alter their genitals because they feel self-conscious or feel like they stand out or too large. And it goes along with the practice that women 18 to 28 have taken on, which is shaving their entire pubic area. Mm-hmm. And so all of this overwhelms me when I think of, if we're trying to teach healthy relationships and how to love our bodies and how to enjoy sexuality, it's that whole possibility of getting to that place is shooting out the other directions with, you know, with these crazy media images and what young women are thinking they need to do to be attractive and what young men think they need to do to access love and connection. Because men primarily, you know, associate their intimacy with their sexual relationships. Women primarily associate their intimacy, right, with talking and communication mm-hmm. and their girlfriends. But men don't have that. And so if they're trying to access intimacy through their sexual relationships and yet they have no skills to access them, except through the violence, and you have young women feeling like, I am going to express my sexual power by having sex. There's so many mixed messages. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. If you want to get in on this conversation, I'd love to know what you're thinking. I know there's a lot of people thinking about the whole sexual assault arguments about who is at fault for sexual assault. I mean, do women play a role in this? Should women be paying more attention? 805-781-3875 to join the conversation. I'm here with Megan and James representing RISE. And say again what RISE stands for?
So RISE is, in and of itself, it's our name. It's the word. It's we like to think of the people that we help rising up from what has happened to them. We also have a tagline that is respect, inspire, support, empower. And these are the values that we try to instill.
So how do you ever feel like you're trying to instill these values in this wave of cultural messages that people are getting is overwhelming?
All the time. But I think I want to go back to when you were talking to James about men being involved in the movement. When I was an AmeriCorps member at the SARP Center in 2010, so 6 years ago, we had one part-time male employee who ran our education program and a few male board members. We had no male volunteers. It was a woman's movement. And I think what's so exciting about being a part of the movement right now is I think it really is shifting. I mean, the conversations we're having here now, the articles that I'm reading on the internet, those weren't popping up 6 years ago as frequently as they are now. And there's more of a dialogue happening. And it was really exciting to come back to RISE as a staff member and see how far the agency has come in just those few years. We have a good amount of male volunteers that work on our crisis line that go out and respond to survivors when they're going to start medical exams or law enforcement interviews. And I remember that moment when we had the first male want to sign up for our volunteer training. And everyone came running back to the papers like, oh, my God, a guy wants to sign up for volunteer training. We were like,
Is it allowed?
Oh, wait, is that okay? I think
so. Aren't men supposed to be out there?
Wait, is it what? And it was like such an interesting and exciting time. Because the people that were against it at the time were like, whoa, women that were just assaulted by a man is not going to want a man to show up at her hospital bed and be like, I'm your advocate. That was totally incorrect. I think there are very few instances, if any, we have of that survivors that have said, we always give them the option, but that have said, no, I would feel more comfortable with a woman. Because we're doing men a disservice again if we're not letting them be part of the solution. If you were hurt by a man and you're afraid of men, and then the next person that responds to help you is a man, that helps change your whole view on it and help you feel more safe. And I just think it's really exciting time. And there is this really big cultural shift happening where it isn't black and white. And there is a large gray area with consent and sexual assault. And now that we're having these conversations about it, I just think it's really, really helpful.
And so what about same-sex relationships and violence? You know, what does that look like as far as statistics or...
I'm not sure about statistics. Statistics are so hard with sexual assault because it is so underreported.
Right. It's the most highly unreported crime.
Yeah. And so that's actually, it's interesting. You keep on saying, you know, like the statistics are going up with the awareness. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I'm pretty sure the statistics are staying the same, but the reporting is going up. So it's actually these numbers going up to us is a good thing because we run a confidential crisis line and we help people that have not reported to police a lot of times and they don't want to and that's okay. Maybe it happened a long time ago or they have their own reasons. But I think that the fact that more people are reporting means we're creating a safer environment and people are more aware of the services that are available. And that is just absolutely a good thing, even though it's scary to see the numbers, even though we know that the reported numbers aren't even close to what's actually going on.
Mm-hmm. I remember, you know, when I was in college so many years ago, that it was said that 1 in 2 women would experience some sort of sexual trauma in her lifetime, whether it was sexual abuse as a child or sexual assault as she was older or rape or sexual violence in her relationship. Mm-hmm. 1 in 2, like every other woman. I don't read that as much anymore. And I, you know, the number seems to be 1 in 5 mm-hmm. women. And then 1 in 16 men. And I mm-hmm. think that would surprise people. Like, how are men sexually assaulted? Mm-hmm. And when we talk about 1 in 16, I would think that men would have even a lower incidence of reporting because of the stigma.
Absolutely. And that was a big reason for us as RISE to change our name. We did a survey when we merged and we were the Women's Shelter Program and the Sexual Assault Recovery and Prevention Center. People didn't know that we served men. Men absolutely are victims of this crime, and they should be able to receive the same services. But there is that built-in, it's already hard for people to come forward. And if you're a man with the whole idea of you should have been able to protect yourself, they've got even more weight on their shoulders in some way with the way society is telling them that how to deal with that issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we end up, I think that's part of this new wave that you're talking about is getting the community on board and recognizing that it is affecting everybody, whether or not you've been affected directly or indirectly. And what I mean by that is we certainly serve male clients, people who, and it really doesn't matter what your sexual orientation is. When it comes to sexual assault, again, and I'm going to go back to the point, is that it's much less about sex than it is about the power and control. And so when it comes down to, it doesn't really matter what type of who you go to bed with. It's mm-hmm. about the fact that you find yourself in a situation where somebody takes advantage of you and has power over you. And that can happen to, it can happen to women, it can happen to men, it can happen to transgender people, it happens to everybody. And it's something that part of our movement is letting people know about it, but also making sure that survivors feel like they can come forward to receive the services that we provide. Because for a lot of agencies with women in the name, they don't know that they're eligible for services. And so
Planned Parenthood has an image issue too, because mm-hmm. they serve men and people don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I've talked to someone recently who said that, you know, they were there for they were at Planned Parenthood and that they were the only woman in the waiting room, that it was all men that were there. And so, but yet people, so I think in some places the message is getting out, but there's still a lot of work to be done. And especially when it comes to sexual assault, because there are huge barriers to reporting. And when I say reporting, I'm talking about just going to talk to anybody about it,
right,
getting any help whatsoever. There are huge barriers in place for, it doesn't matter who you are, but when you're a man, it's even harder because you, it's not really talked about as much, men as survivors. It's not really talked about the need to advocate for men as survivors. It's not really something that as a society we've chosen to, you know, we talk about women protecting themselves, self-defense classes and that sort of thing, but mm-hmm. you know, we don't really we assume that men can fend off somebody who might attack them. But if you're incapacitated, it doesn't matter how strong you are. And there's plenty of situations where, you know, someone could become a survivor who you would never expect them to. And so it's really important for everyone to that's one of those myths that's really important that we all as a community try to put to rest.
This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. If you're just tuning in, I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guests are Megan and James from RISE. And if you want to get in on this conversation, we just have a few more minutes, 805-781-3875. I proposed, you know, because I worry that the awareness and prevention movements, from everything from suicide prevention to environmental awareness to sexual assault awareness, sometimes gets us to overload and people don't participate or they don't tune in. And what if we shifted our awareness months to things like, you know, healthy relationships or sexual vitality month, you know, and had workshops or celebrated what it is to be in a sacredly healthy relationship. And if we had, I don't know, just more. Because in old, you know, therapeutic wisdom was that energy, you know, all of our intention flows and our awareness takes us to where our energy is going to flow. That if we focus on the negative, we tend to keep bringing the negative. And if we focus our energy on the positive, that we might focus on the positive or bring positive energy. So I'm curious if anyone else thinks that we need to bring some more positive awareness movements, if it would make a difference. But I also don't want to overlook the role of alcohol and drugs and sexual assault. Because you talk about being incapacitated. But I also think one of the unspoken of pieces of this, especially on college campuses, is the rampant abuse of alcohol, especially in blackout drinking and, you know, becoming incapacitated. And then where does consent fall? And that I think one of the other elephants in the room when it comes to, one, not only do our children not have a lot of education about their sexuality, but they have very little understanding about the effects of alcohol on their bodies and in their lives because it's been so normalized. Mm-hmm. And so where does alcohol and drug education come into what you're doing at RISE? Are they part of the education that you provide?
Is it part of our prevention education?
Well, I know that at least, you know, when we talk about it in our volunteer training, because that's the area that I'm more of an expert in, is we definitely focus on the fact that what we call DFSA, drug facilitated sexual assault, alcohol and marijuana are the two most commonly consumed substances that facilitate a sexual assault. And what you find is that in most instances, the people are consuming those willingly. Not always. Of course, there are people who use drugs, including those two, to get someone incapacitated for the purpose mm-hmm. Of sexually assaulting them. But as far as that role that they play, the way we look at it is that those substances in and of themselves don't actually cause any harm in terms of sexual assault. Those substances never have assaulted somebody. It takes somebody with the intent of taking advantage of somebody else using those substances to sexually assault another person. But
I don't know if we can separate things out that easily, because that's assuming that someone who's 18 or under, or even 18 or older, understands what drugs and alcohol are doing to their bodies. You know, because if you're not getting any education about the effects of alcohol and how it incapacitates you, then in some ways it is right. You can't expect people to utilize these substances if there is a healthy way when you're under the age of 18, and then have it not contribute to your sexual behaviors. And I don't know if anyone drinks with the intention of sexually assaulting someone, but I think when your inhibitions are down and you have a lot of confusion about sex and sexuality and how it works, that it is like a loaded gun. I don't know how you can separate the two out.
Well, I several years ago, I remember responding to a crisis call that was an underage woman, and she had gone to a clinic for medical attention, which then caused them to call us because they're mandated reporters. And I remember so vividly her telling me she went out, she got in a fight with her parents, she went out, she drank for the first time, she woke up in another town and she didn't know how she'd gotten there. She was drugged. There's no way you have one drink and that happens to you. And I remember her looking at me and saying, "And now I know why you don't drink." And that was so sad to me, because that was her first experience drinking, which is something that can be fun, and she was taken advantage of. So, I mean, they're connected, but they're separate issues. And when we focus too much on the drugs and alcohol, we're really ignoring the fact that that person did premeditate that. And lots of times they are premeditated. And most people that are committing sexual assault, it's not like a, "Oops, I woke up in bed next to you, I wasn't sure if this happened." The people that are perpetrating it are re-victimizing multiple people. And it is more of this mindset, as James keeps on saying, of control and power, because it's not so many of those moments where both parties are wondering, "Oh, we drank too much, what happened?" Those aren't the reports that are being made. It really is more scary than that, with people that are premeditating it and have those tendencies and are using that tool to target their victims. There are certainly people that aren't drugged and that, you know, drink too much and black out. And those are that's where we see a lot of people feeling shame as well, too, where they, even though something happened that wasn't their fault, they knew that they were drinking. They don't want to report it to the police. They don't want to tell their friends. They're embarrassed because they know that they, or their parents, they knew that they think that they had a part to play in it. And while you're incapacitated, safety is always an issue. And we have responsibility to keep care of ourselves that way. It's a hard cross section, I think, between drugs, alcohol, and sexual assault.
And when you talk about sexual assault, so I can be clear, because it's come up a number of times. Mm-hmm. So are you implying that sexual assault happens between a small number of men or women who are always perpetrating multiple sexual assaults? That's how your definition of sexual assault?
Yeah, so I think if you look at the numbers, that it's the majority of perpetrators are what we call serial perpetrators, and then at the same time, also with when it comes to victims and survivors, once you've been victimized once, your likelihood of becoming victimized again also increases.
And why is that?
And you know, there's a lot of speculation that can go around as far as the serial perpetration goes. Some of that is going to be more along the lines of having to do with the way that those particular people were socialized when they were growing up, and the communities that they surround themselves in, the types of people that they surround themselves with. And then when it comes to the victimized side, I would say that has more to do with once you've experienced something as traumatic as a sexual assault, that it can be I think it can really affect you as a person in a way to where it's difficult to assess safety. Right. It's difficult to determine what is a safe relationship and what isn't, because your whole bearings are thrown off by that. And of course, everyone's going to be different, but I think that plays a role.
So to wrap things up, and I could go on and on with both of you. I want to make sure people know what's going on this Saturday.
This weekend, yeah. Walk a Mile in Her Shoes in Mission Plaza, the International Men's March to End Rape, Sexual Assault, and Gender Violence. It is a large movement that happens all over the world. There's walks happening everywhere. Men walk a mile in women's high heels to show their support for
our
cause.
So if there's any men out there who want to participate, do they just show up Saturday morning?
You can show up. You can pre-register now. We're running out of t-shirts, so you might want to do that. walkamileslow.org and Mission Plaza, 10 a.m. registration. We've got about 150 pairs of high heels in men's sizes 8 through 14. So get there early to make sure we still have your size.
And the website for Rise, for people who would like to find more about your services.
Absolutely. Rise Slow. That's riseslow.org.
Thank you so much, James and Megan, for coming in today and talking about Sexual Assault Awareness Month. And I do believe that anything we can take out of the dark and bring into the light starts to bring positive energy. And so I do, you know, ultimately believe that talking about these things and not being embarrassed to talk about it and having more people be able to come forward and say, this has been my experience, mm-hmm. and normalize that, the farther we'll go with trying to bring everyone into a place of having healthy and strong and positive relationships. So thank you. Yeah. And thank you for being a part of this conversation with The Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can listen to other shows at kcbx.org or our podcast on iTunes. I look forward to speaking to you again next week. And I leave you today with some music from Prince, who was all about the joy and fun in relationships and in life in general. Thank you for supporting Public Radio, KCBX.